Welcome in to the Level Up Experience. This is episode number 42. This was a discussion panel that took place in a virtual environment on GamerJive called Run for the Unicorns, produced by the Silicon Nexus Project. Panelists include Yespa from Ethereum, Agro from Splinterlands, Curran Mulvihill from Ether Legends, and Block Decentral as the moderator. We discuss ownership of content, the tokenization of data, the indie game community and blockchain, and the overall landscape of investing, collecting, and trading NFTs. I had a great time being a part of the production team for the panel. I'd highly recommend checking out the YouTube replay. The link will be in the show notes. Before we jump into the panel, just want to say thank you to our sponsor, GG Locators. GG Locators is a contract staffing and executive search firm, highly specialized in sourcing and placing top-tier talent in gaming, esports, and extended reality industries. Nicole Minka is the managing director and will have more information about GG Locators shortly. Also, just wanted to say thank you for leaving 5-star ratings and reviews, subscribing to the podcast and YouTube channel, smashing that like button on every video. That's how we get the word out about the content, and it's greatly appreciated. Here's a word from GG Locators, then the panel discussion from Run for the Unicorns and the Silicon Nexus Project.
Hi, my name is Nicole Minka, and I'm the managing director of GG Locators. GG Locators, or Good Game Recruiting, is the first staffing firm operating as a niche provider specifically for the gaming industry in the U.S. Our company launched in February 2019, and we've taken the market by storm. We are a contract-to-hire, and direct-hire staffing solution for your entire organization. Our focus is on the highly specialized verticals of interactive gaming, corporate gamification, and esports, which makes us the unrivaled experts in gaming recruitment. Our clients range from indie studios to AAA household names to multi-billion dollar corporate powerhouses who work with us to find top talent ranging from art and design, production, QA, programming, to corporate support and operations. While we're headquartered in Charlotte, North Carolina, we work with dev studios, publishers, esports organizations, and corporate gamification teams across North America. From East Coast to West Coast, we are laser focused in providing the best talent and opportunities to our clients. We're currently spearheading over 60 searches and are in hot pursuit of qualified and passionate candidates to match with the perfect career opportunity. So if you or a colleague are looking for the next step in gaming or to grow your team out, reach out to us at gglocators.com. Enjoy the podcast.
I know we touched basis on the earlier one about the kind of differences with NFTs with older games like Magic the Gathering Online, Magic the Gathering Arena, other trading card games and thereof like digital trading card games versus some of the crypto games that are currently out today. So I figured we'd just start off with, seeing how you guys feel as, the developers and, workers on these titles, the differences between your games, the ones that run on the blockchain and the more traditional style digital card games like Hearthstone, Magic Gathering, Arena, so on and so forth.
No, I think the biggest difference between mainstream and what blockchain is trying to achieve is basically content ownership. So you can tokenize data, that being trading cards, accessories, weapons, whatever that is. And then as opposed to mainstream where everything is centralized, it's owned by the game company. You have all these assets that you can't really do anything with. So I'll give the prime example, World of Warcraft back in the day. I'm a tenure of World of Warcraft, to say the least. I've played a lot. And I also remember the days of trying to sell your account and then getting banned for, ever. So then your account was just gone. But time invested into a game, I think, is key, where you spend a lot of time and you really want to get something out of that, whether that's, items, gold, skins, whatever it is in your game that you have. And then you can monetize that by doing tokenization of those assets. And if I'm done with the game or if I want to be a part of the ecosystem of the game, I can trade those token assets as represented as my digital content. So I think personally, that's what separates us, generally speaking, from the AAA game, is that the user and the player is in complete control. They have total ownership. And I think that's, the main benefit to what blockchain has to offer.
Yes, I definitely agree with you there. I don't know, Eggroad, if you want to go next, if there's anything particular with your guys' games that kind of make it stand out from the traditional digital trading card game.
Well, generally speaking, I think blockchain enables some good stuff. You know, you get the benefits of physical card ownership. Now it's through a token. But then you also get the benefits of digital things that now are open 24/7. So, you know, typically for like Magic, you can really only play the old school game when the school is open, the store is open, or your brother's awake. But now you can really just do this whenever. So you get the convenience of digital, the ownership of physical, and then you also get this benefit of being able to earn while you play. So like in Hearthstone, you might actually earn something, but because you can't sell it, it doesn't have value. Whereas if you're earning rewards cards in Splinterlands, you're actually earning something of value. So I break that down as play anytime, trade anytime, and earn every win. And I think that that whole system is unique to blockchain-based games.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And definitely one of the things that a lot of people have found irritating about these micropayments in, you know, these other games like Hearthstone, buying crates and whatnot, and then you have the games on the server and or the cards on the server, and you can't, you know, you can't trade them, you can't sell them, can't do anything with them, you know, in the count besides play with them. And so I definitely agree. I know as far as a few of these games that, you know, with, as we were talking about quite a bit in the last panel, you know, with these Ethereum, you know, gas fees and whatnot, and, you know, some of the scalability issues on some of these blockchains that, you know, it can cause a bunch of hindrances for a lot of these titles. And I can imagine that being especially true for these, you know, the trading card games, wherein, you know, when you go and buy and sell, you know, some of these cards, depending on the marketplace, if you're, you know, using Ethereum, have it in like an NFT token, let's say, and you're selling it on OpenSea, you know, right now the fee for it, buying and selling it, is going to make it pretty much not worth the, you know, cost of getting the asset itself. Splinterlands, I know you guys are currently on Hive, and that has since allowed you to hold quite a few bit of players and transactions going through and allowed your marketplace to be quite live and active. How have you seen that kind of struggle on the blockchain for scalability, and where do you see it going in the future as the game continues to grow in popularity and gain more you know, users?
So when we first told people, we started on the Steam blockchain, which most people know from Steemit. And then we left it when once Justin Sun acquired Steemit. So we moved to the fork called Hive. And, you know, when we first started on Steam, and really even since we've moved to Hive, people have thought, they often instead of Ethereum. And it's always with like some push of like, why did you morons do this? But, you know, I do think that we could have raised more money having gone on Ethereum, because, you know, if nothing else, the DeFi boom, it just shows how much people are willing to pump absurd amounts of money in through Ethereum apps. But in terms of usability, it's just the gas fees and having a per transaction gas fee aren't fun. So Splinterlands does things a little bit differently. All of the things that happen in game happen on chain. So it's not just that you own NFTs and then everything else is on a centralized server. Like literally every single card transaction, team I submit, battle I'm looking for, tournament I enter, all of that happens on chain. And that's possible on Hive. But as a group, we do something like 600,000 transactions per day. Yesterday, we had 130,000 battles. And so you can't. If every single one of those had a gas fee, one, it becomes, you know, incredibly expensive, but two, it just stops being fun, right? Like if you as a player want to do 50 battles and you get charged 50 micro fees, which aren't, these days aren't even all that micro, That's just not a good gaming experience. So I think we missed out on maybe being able to raise some more money, but we've really been able to maximize just the utility of our game, how many people can play, how many people can interact. We almost had 7,000. We were just shy of the 7,000 accounts playing mark yesterday. So that was a new all-time high for us. And the one other thing I'd add about Hive as a blockchain choice is that the fees make it so that you have to own crypto first, because you have to be able to pay the gas fee and you need crypto, which means that your onboarding of a new user isn't simply come play our game. It's go to Coinbase, sign up for an account, transfer in some US dollars, convert it on the exchange into Ethereum, move that into a MetaMask wallet that you control, and then you can register for the game. And that is a huge ask for normies. Whereas with the approach that we've taken, because you don't have transaction fees, we just log people in with a username and a password. We create an account on their behalf that they get to manipulate using their username and password. And if they eventually want their keys, we just give it to them and they could change the keys or whatever. But for brand new players that are starting in, you don't need crypto. You don't need blockchain experience. And it's things like this whole system that we're building, I think, is really going to lend itself to allowing us to mainstream our app and hopefully be the first crypto app to really go full mainstream.
Yeah, it's definitely seen quite a bit. I believe I heard from Dapp Radar John earlier that it was number one still for quite a little while on the, you know, game section through the site. So, you know, definitely getting quite a bit of users. And that answered most of pretty much the question of, you know, trying to advertise the game and get users into it because of, you know, as you went through the very long and extensive process of trying to get a wallet and get everything set up to jump into some of these other games. I don't know if Yespa's mic is working yet, but I know at least Aether Legends, I believe, is also running through the Ethereum blockchain. So I don't know if you guys have any sort of scalability solutions that you found or any methods to work around this within the game, whether it be on a server or through other means, but I do know that quite a few titles have been looking for alternatives other than Ethereum to transfer their games over to, just because of the amount of users it can hold and, you know, the amount of transactions it can go through and the price of it. All right.
Yeah, absolutely. So everything that was just said about Hive Chain is the opposite of what Ethereum is dealing with right now, which it's difficult to onboard players without a multi-step process. You know, we have done extensive research. We've actually deployed all of our own contracts to Matic, for example. But to be completely honest, nothing against Matic, by all means, there are limitations that we find within how we want to employ our ecosystem. And the best fit for us at this time was going with Engine. So I think everybody understands, who Engine is. And they are building a scaling solution that eliminates all the fees, but it does not address the onboarding of gamers to get into a game and buy crypto from Coinbase and so on and so forth. So our path right now is to go with Engine. We've talked about multi-chain solutions as well, whether that's Hive, whether that's Wax Chain. We've been looking at other ways to solve the issue, because I will tell you, just to be honest with everybody, and I think everyone can agree on Ethereum, it's been crippling. We set up I heard somebody talk earlier about, you know, wouldn't that be cool if you could have this sword in the game and it shows up visually? And we set up something called forging, which allows you to kind of manipulate and forge two NFT assets together. And that was all done on the blockchain. We literally released it right when the fees went crazy. So it's been unfortunate for us in the standpoint of investment of time in the trying to roll out an ecosystem that something out of our control is no longer supported. So we've taken a few avenues in looking at how the forging element, which is a critical part to our game, how that would work, where you could accomplish several things off-chain, and then with Engine's scalability solution, you could issue a particular asset for how you kind of decide you want your character to be or to look. So ultimately, our long-term is to stick with Engine. We are going to continue investigating other chains as far as just propagating the game and seeing the success of Splinterlands is actually something that's really eye-opening and important, because I think on Ethereum, gamers are really being left behind. Gamers and players and developers, especially with the DeFi boom, because you know gaming may be 100 million of a 300 billion market, and there's no love and there's no attention. So we've got to kind of work through it and do our best.
Yes, you make some excellent points there. And I know a lot of people have been looking at Engine, you know, a lot of developers for, you know, scalability and just, you know, using the, was it Unity platform to make, you know, just kind of overall more quality coded and detailed games than what a lot of Solidity and Ethereum can do at the very moment. And so hopefully that works out. But I know you guys are doing something quite a bit different as far as you know, actually minting the QR onto physical versions of the card and then having two different versions of the game. Has there been a lot of challenges in this current ecosystem as well, as far as like trying to mint physical versions of the card, and as well as like the quantity? Because I know that right now they're being sold individually, and that, you know, most decks take a decent number of you know, cards to set up, as well as, you know, getting more packs and whatnot. Yep. So
I think the simple answer, so to kind of back a little background, is that the entire concept actually started as a physical trading card game, and we were able to figure out a way to actually create unique QR codes for each physical card generated, where you could scan the card and then it would redeem it directly to the blockchain. So you kind of have that Tether ability. If you don't want to do it, obviously you don't have to scan that card. But with the environment, you know, that is a transaction to redeem the card. So based on the fees, I don't even know what that would cost. But we have been in discussions with Engine to adapt that QR function. And that's another thing that Engine has to offer, is they do QR drops, and they're releasing that aspect to developers that let you can create one QR code, you can create 100 of the same item. And in conjunction with that scalability solution, there will be no fees associated with redeeming that asset. So we've kind of taken a pause on producing, just because of the gas crisis, producing additional trading cards with the physical QR until we can come up with kind of that generation two with Engine feeless, so we can roll that out in our, I would say, mass expansion of physical trading card.
Very interesting. And yeah, I know I have a few myself and I absolutely love them. Hopefully that, you know, something comes up where it can definitely be pumped up, because I know a lot of people have been looking forward to and slowly collecting up quite a bit of cards, you know, for a deck to, you know, begin playing. And they're very nice. I know the artwork on a lot of them are very unique, and I am definitely quite a fan personally. I know, in just to mention for anyone that might not be checking it, the text, I asked Yespa a few questions about my Ethereum and the, you know, scalability issues and whatever on Ethereum. And there's quite a bit in there. So if you want to hear that side of it, you can feel free to go and check that out over in the chat.
One other thing I might add is, you know, a lot of questions came up, you know, even with moving to Engine for us, it was, you know, what's going to happen to my assets? Am I still going to be able to redeem my QR code? So those smart contracts will exist indefinitely in order enable to, you know, if you have a QR that you haven't scratched and you want to scratch it 10 years from now, you know, that smart contract will be out there. So I want to reassure people on that. The challenge obviously is gas and timing. And I'm going to mention the word ETH 2.0, which we don't know when ETH 2.0 is really going to occur. I know they're starting in their testnet. But the hope is that that emplacement of architecture will remain and exist, that will leave in place as well. So if Ethereum gets better from a scaling solution, from a bottom line architecture, you know, that's something that maybe it's a year from now that will still be out there. And if fees make sense, you know, people can still do what they need to do with those current assets. So there's no taking away of what we've created so far.
That's definitely reassuring. And we know that a big part of the reason why a lot of people are for the blockchain is the fact that it is immutable, that everything that is on there stays on there. And so, you know, it's nice that you have at least that sort of security in the game, or in the cards at least, that you can, you know, as you said, scratch and redeem it 10 years from now or whatever, so on and so forth. Plus the fact that, you know, while a little bit more expensive, actually having the physical cards with the QR, you know, as you were kind of mentioning, sadly, not so much right now, but not only will you be able to play the digital version, you know, online with anyone all over the world, whatever, connect with all these people, but if you and, say, you know, your friends or whatever have, you know, a decent collection of the cards, you can then, you know, play it in person and on a more personal experience. And as far as that, I know I mentioned slightly in the other panel that some earlier games like CryptoKitties, you know, how they just have like a picture, you know, on a square kind of like trading card looking, you know, thing. It's like, here's your cat, you get it, you have this asset. And I know my Ethereum, as well as Somnium Space, you can do things with those CryptoKitties now. Like in my Ethereum, you can transfer it over to the Forge within the game, at least when it was live, and convert that CryptoKitty into a trading card that would have its own, you know, stats, be part of its own set, have its own unique, like, rarity. And in Somnium Space, you can take those CryptoKitties and turn them into, like, 3D virtual moving, you know, kind of lifelike digital cats, which with that platform in particular has VR capabilities. So you can put on a headset and walk around like it would be, you know, like your own, you know, digital live pet. Do you see either of your games, any of the games, evolving to further kind of implement these kind of next gen technologies in a way that'll avoid, or not to allow users more kind of like freedom and like the more ability to do extra with it, you know, like to trade it between games to prolong its life, for say, or like to add this extra content to it?
For Aether Legends, you know, you have the multiverse with Engine, which I think the beauty of blockchain in general is that look at it as a public database. So if you own an asset on CryptoKitties, or you own an asset on Chibi Fighters, or whatever it is that you own, any game can create a mechanic to bring in and make that asset usable. Obviously, with permission and collaboration is preferred, but even without. So if I wanted to bring in a CryptoKitty and have that represented on a trading card, I absolutely could do that. So I think the concept with Engine's multiverse is that's exactly what they're trying to do with one asset in multiple games, and then grow that collaboration. And I think the bounds are endless on how you do that. We've done multiple collaborations with not just Engine games, but other games. where we've had assets that are usable in, you know, whether it's Grasshopper Farms, Metaverse, my Metaverse, or other things. And then likewise, we take their assets and we can utilize those in our game as well to display them as trading cards or characters that have certain stats. And really, the sky's the limit.
I had a question, actually. I'd like to talk a little bit more about, you know, the virtual land space, and then like a platform like Decentraland, and like taking an NFT that I've acquired on another platform and putting it into, you know, my plot on Decentraland. Like, what are y'all's thoughts on that? I guess like creating that new layer of, I'm not only collecting the NFT, but I'm also like putting it in my virtual home.
Yeah, I definitely find it to be interesting, and part of why I, you know, brought it up, as I was saying, I kind of compare like Decentraland, Somnium Space as like the two big ones for like digital crypto land ownership. And I definitely think, you know, as a lot of people have been saying, you know, sky's the limit once people really get this technology unlocked, as far as like Somnium Space, because I know they actually have their VR already done and like ready to go. They have like a planetarium in there that you can get tickets for with their crypto token and actually go and see like a live show. And then with, you know, some of these assets, kind of like what I was trying to talk about earlier with Reality Clash, you know, if you could import, say, some of those games like, you know, an FPS to VR, and then you have digital gun skins or whatever as assets to be able to convert into, you know, 3D virtual guns that you can, you know, actually carry around and keep holstered and use within the games. My big question on that, that doubts anyone probably be able to answer at the moment, because of how new it is, but like where the market would go for that as far as like selling the assets and trading them. I know with my Ethereum, when it was active with the CryptoKitties, being able to convert them into a, you know, my Ethereum card, you could then sell those specific cards back onto the marketplace. And then it kind of adds a different layer of like what you can offer with a CryptoKitty if you can then, you know, say that it's able to be converted into a, you know, trading card. So that way you're not just staring at this picture, but actually adding it to your deck and, you know, battling with it and then upgrading it and selling it. Then obviously with some of these trading card games, they could most likely quite easily, you know, virtualize those into like a 3D, you know, like a card you could pick up and, you know, play like an actual, you know, card game with your virtual avatar, which I'd say would be quite a step closer to, you know, kind of like the physical, you know, form, actually getting together and having your deck on you and pulling it out and whatever. Mm-hmm. Except, you know, we're all staying 6 feet apart at least. And that,
you know, are we going to go incorporate all these gadgets, gizmos, and cool new things? And I ultimately, what we've been doing is really trying to become a cross blockchain platform. So yeah, we'll keep posting all of our transactions on Hive and use that as sort of like the main repository. But what we've been doing is integrating, we integrated with the Wombat wallet, and that's an EOS tool. So now if you want, you go to Splinterlands and you sign in with Wombat, and for a user of EOS, it just feels like you're coming in from EOS. We did the same thing with Tron Link. So now you can just sign in using Tron Link and you just come in like you're a normal Tron user. And then we also did the same thing with Wax. So you have your Wax All Access, you come in and you sign up. We're releasing MetaMask. So, you know, you sign in into Splinterlands with MetaMask, and then the next one will be Arcane. And so before we get to all like the really cool stuff of, you know, VR tools and other ways that we bridge NFTs from one place to another, like we're just starting at the smaller parts of, it's a little bit more manageable to try to bridge these communities and making it so that the players just feel like, oh, I'm just logging in with the tools that I'm used to. And I think that goes a long way.
So building out the local ecosystem versus, because that you got to build that first. I mean, I'm trying to do a big picture here, I guess, but building out your own ecosystem first to where it's more seamless, then branching out to take that, let's say that NFT or that collectible into the VR space, into where it really starts taking off from that standpoint, is the way I see it, right?
Yeah, I mean, because Look, I'm super proud of where we've gotten. We got that 7,000 accounts in a day, and that's killing it, and I'm super proud. But, like, you know, you got to stay humble because it's still, like, 9 a.m. to 9.05 a.m. on Fortnite. Like, it's such a – like, literally everything we've done falls into, like, the dust threshold for some of these other games. And so, you know, we're really focused on building our community and trying to get as many players just – into the ecosystem as possible and start scaling. Hopefully we'll have some nice, we're starting to run ads on Brave, and maybe there'll be some other partnerships available there too. But, you know, we really just want to see lots of gamers. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, I come from a sales background. I worked for a big publishing company for a decade. And one of the best lessons in sales that I've ever learned is that if you want somebody to do something, you have to make it as easy as humanly possible for them to do it. So in this case, we want them to come, we want them to play, we want them to enjoy themselves. And if we're telling them, yes, but you have to do it this way, that's not as good as saying, you know, we have done everything we can on our end to make sure that your experience is seamless. So if you want to use Google as your sign-in, go ahead. You want to use Arcane, go ahead. EOS, whatever, it doesn't matter. We'll just use whatever tool you yourself want to use.
You know, and I would add on to that too. Onboarding is absolutely crucial, and choice and ease of onboarding. But I do want to tie back on kind of that cross-chain usability, which is, you know, one of the most important things about that is that if you give a player value, if I own one asset, I mean, just think about it like this. If I own a Fortnite token, I'm just going to make something up, and I want to go play World of Warcraft, or I want to go play 10 other games, I can't take anything from Fortnite and go play that. So I really think the value of cross-chain or even cross-asset collaboration is huge, because it opens the value for the player to be able to take one asset and play multiple games, which means they're not spending additional money trying to, you know, buy a different game or get locked into some other system. So that scalability aspect and that benefit to the gamers and players around is going to be huge the more people do that. And that kind of goes into your, you know, sandbox.
I think that thing, those kinds of things will come, and we'll get there. And it's going to be a better experience than what players have really had advantages to. I want to be cautious because, you know, these games are, the games are like this weird mix of decentralized and still private companies. So, like, we exist as businesses, and there's no way that, like, we exist if we're not able to sell products. So whereas I want to be able to bring in other games' assets into my game, and actually one of the ways that we look to do that is by incorporating payment methods. So, for example, we just allowed for us to pay out tournaments in ERC-20 tokens. So gamecredits.org is like, GameCredits is an old school project on Ethereum. They're one of the first gaming-centric tokens to exist. And now our system can both accept that for payment and dole that out as a reward in a tournament. And that's like a relatively new feature for us. But I think that really opens up the possibility of how we can do these cross-chain things. You know, everybody from Game Credit benefits because they have a new use case for their utility. We benefit because all those people that are holders now have a new place to spend it, and hopefully they'll bring that value to our game. But what it's not doing is, it's like, if I just allow every single object from every single game into my game, then it's going to be difficult for us to sell things. And so, you know, we exist as a business by selling things. So it's the kind of thing where I want those in my game and I want to give them utility. I just have to be cautious that I also have to have my own in-game content that is exclusive to my game, or that is like the main driver of your success in my game. and all of these other things are cool and useful, but a little bit on the ancillary side so that I can still run and manage a business.
I don't know how you could split this up, but on your all's platforms, what is maybe the split between collectors versus traders versus investors? I'm very fascinated by that because I think there's an entire like world of those three.
So Splinterlands does something that's pretty unique. We allow our cards to be rented. Mm-hmm. And so we give out a lot of prizes. Every single match you win, you can win some Dark Energy Crystals, which is our in-game cryptocurrency. Every single day there's a quest, and if you complete the quest, you can get some like rewards cards. There's a season. At the end of the season, you get a big rewards loot haul, and then we have tournaments, and to date we've given out like $140,000 worth of tournament prizes. So we give out a lot of money and prizes, and what that means is that the players, I have like a set of players. One set of players likes to own and hold cards, and they treat them like digital assets in that they just sit there and lease them. They don't care too much about the game per se. They just want to own the cards and rent them out to other players. And then I have players that are typically younger and might even be from some third world countries where they don't have as much wealth. And so what they want is they'll rent the cards and then use that to go earn what is literally more than their monthly salary by playing this game. So I have the full spectrum there of people that buy like our top 10 holders in the game. If you want to be in the top 10, you have to own $30,000 worth of cards. So this is not people that look at this as just entertainment money. These are folks that look at this as a scarce digital asset that they can hold for a long period of time, or that they can rent, or that they expect if we are successful in our mission of mainstreaming gamers, that because of the collectability, they have high hopes for where their assets will go. So that's on one side. On the other side, we have the players that have nothing, but now because they can rent, we had a player that wrote an article about spending $12 in rental fees in a 2-week period and making it into the top 50. And so it's just, we have players on across that whole spectrum of renter to holder and player. And I don't know, to me, it's a win that we're able to attract players of all these different socioeconomic backgrounds and all these countries. And some see it as a way for passive revenue, and some see it as a way to play something that earns them a living and actually provides the food on their table.
No, thanks for the explanation. Curran, do you have anything to add?
You know, I think for the most part, I would say we have a lot of collectors. The artwork and the scarcity of some of the items is low. The artwork is really amazing. My buddy of many, many years, world-renowned artist Mark Ludi, he's been doing this a long time, but his contributions have really made a lot of this possible. So I think you have a lot of the collectors. I think the staking part of it, especially with DeFi, we have it on our roadmap. But a lot of that is contingent on the engine ecosystem and the feeless aspects that go along with that, on what we're looking to do from a rewards standpoint. I'll say more staking than it is renting, but you could probably call them the same thing. And then investor-wise, we do also have our own ERC-20 token, which grants utility in what I mentioned before about fusing cards together, like forging. If you take one NFT and another, it does require a ERC-20, which is our kind of gaming currency. So I think it's a mix. I think everybody, wants to, get reimbursed for their time that they put in. So I think it's more than just the assets. But when they play the game, it's the time spent and what do you get out of that? So I think there's multiple layers of investment, of collection, of playing the game, where all these things simultaneously can offer a player the benefit of rewards?
No, thanks for answering that question, because that comes up in my mind a lot, kind of splicing it into those three parts, trader, investor, and a player. Because and sometimes it can be all, you can be all three, which is really interesting. Like you said, doing what you love by playing a game you love, essentially. I mean, in the end, right? You know, so it's different than 10 years ago.
Yep, exactly.
This is an interesting comment from chat. If you go down bottom right-hand corner, click the text bubble. In a recent, this is from Krobert. Hopefully I'm saying that right. In a recent Twitter survey, Splinterlands players answered the question, what is your favorite thing about Splinterlands? 40% battling, 11% markets, 28% rewards, 24% collecting. I find that fascinating just to see those numbers.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I don't know anyone else on here, if Yespa has any stats like that from when the game was active or whatnot, but it's always very interesting to hear what people are really interested in, you know, as aspects of the game.
It's fun because that's like a mix of, I'm here to go for the competitive spirit of the game and the like trickiness of the ecosystem of how they battle and how you put up your teams. You know, there's some that are just here to like flip cards. We have a bunch of players that like to buy cards low and sell them high. And, you know, the market cap of the cards total is over $4 million. So we have, and there's a lot of activity. We have like $3,000 to 10, on low days, it's like 3 to 5. On medium days, we're doing 5 to 10,000. And then strong market days, there's over $10,000 in player-to-player transactions. And there's whole like automated bots for trading. So there's a bunch of dudes that just like to sit around and swap the cards. And I know one guy that's made over $80,000 by waiting for whales to kind of rage quit from the game, buy their decks, and sometimes they'll even just sell their decks back to them at a profit. So the rewards are the people that are really there to just like earn. So there's folks that are looking to earn money by playing this game, and that's a big part to them. And then we have that whole piece that just are like, you know, the silver folks and the gold folks that just like to collect coins. You know, they might have stamp collections or all kinds of little collections that they keep. And Splinterlands just falls into that list of what they like holding. So, yeah, we really run the gambit in terms of who's in the game and what's their motivation for being there.
Yeah, for sure, definitely, and the game definitely has its great aspects, and I've played it for quite a while myself, and yeah, I can definitely see why, as far as out of crypto games right now, which, you know, as you mentioned, even with 7,000 daily users is a, you know, drop in the bucket as opposed to a lot of these AAA game developer, you know, studio titles. But, you know, the crypto gaming market is still extremely niche at the moment, as well as just the amount of people that actually know what it is and the opportunities that it holds and, you know, the games that are currently out for it. So hopefully once, you know, more people start to, you know, realize that these games are out here, we'll begin seeing, you know, another much larger influx of users. As far as from Yespa, just at the end of this, I know he was saying that the tournaments and strategy prep was the key community focus when his game was active. I definitely had quite a large hand in playing it. I was very active. I had a decent sized guild when my community was a bit more active in the gaming side of things. I think like 30 something members. You had like gold production, produce production, like stone and wood and whatever, and you could you know, build up your wall and then challenge other, you know, guilds and whatnot. And then you would have the tournaments, you know, they'd have weekly tournaments, card, you know, battles with different amounts of pots and legendary cards and whatnot. So, yeah, a lot of great content over there. Planning on coming out with the 2.0. You can also see most of this in the chat if you head over there. But, yeah, that was definitely one of my favorite crypto games when it was active and when I was a lot more active in it and whatnot. So definitely wishing for the best over there. I don't know if we have anything else that anyone wants to add before this panel officially closes.
Okay. No, I just wanted to thank everybody for setting this up. A shout out to Jared and Andrew for getting this together. I think it's been awesome, an awesome experience. And I appreciate the invite to talk to people. I would close in saying I think a lot of us as indie developers are really the trailblazers. So the AAA games can have a free pass in the next few years to come on board. But you know, I appreciate everybody's support and thank you.
Great to be here. First off, kudos to the GamerJog people. This is a cool platform, and kudos to Silicon Nexus for hooking up with them. I come check out our game, splinterlands.com. We're always looking for more players, and hopefully we can find some good hardcore gamers and collectors. And we have a Discord, so if you go to discord.splinterlands.com, that's the best place to kind of join this community.
Know, traditional playing or traditional trading cards like NBA cards are exploding. So for me, I feel a trickle down to NFTs. And I don't know if I'm looking at that correctly. I know it's a very broad statement. I do find it very interesting that, you know, I don't really see much of a difference from traditional sports cards to NFT collectibles. And I think that's going to pull the NFTs up.
Well, everything that we've built in Splinterlands, I think, can be applicable to any collecting game. So whether it's maybe in the future, we'll make a partnership with companies like Disney or Marvel. And, you know, hopefully in that version, you're collecting the Hulk and Captain America and Wolverine. Maybe it would be like a music collecting game and you would get Justin Timberlake. Or maybe we can do a sports collecting game, sort of like a fantasy football or fantasy baseball kind of thing, where now you're collecting, Tom Brady's or LeBron James. But, you know, we built this system where you can digitize, tokenize, and monetize intellectual property. And we're really not limited to just our orcs and elves and wizards. Like, it can really be any kind of content. So, I think it's only really a matter of time before people want to reach a global digital audience and use cryptocurrency because it's so damn convenient. And they want to be able to have ownership, which is through NFTs. And we just kind of have to get through, you know, like sludge through a little bit of these opening stages. But as more and more people realize the benefits of these things, like the transparency, the fungibility, the market size, the 24/7 access, the speed, the trustlessness, you know, you don't have to worry, is that card a counterfeit or not? Like, all that stuff is just what makes this technology so powerful. And yes, you have to watch your keys, but ultimately it's a pretty small ask for quite a lot of benefits. And I only see this space getting bigger.
I concur with everything that was just said.
Well, hey, we're at the end of the panel, past the time. Thank you all so much for jumping on. I really appreciate you all sharing what you guys are doing. I'm obviously fascinated with it myself as a consumer, but just I love talking about the different markets. I think it's really interesting.